Blog Talk Radio. The conquering lion shall break every chain. The conquering lion shall break every chain. Give him the victory. Again and again, again and again, give him the victory. Oh, the conquering lion shall break every chain. The conquering
Kamaya, Brother Drew.
Maria.
How you doing, boy?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good today. Trying to maintain and keep on pressing on. You know, a lot of our brothers and sisters don't get to see another day, but you know,
we're gonna continue our government class on government. All governments are secret society, so government comes on the head in a secret society. So, but we're going to go back in to 1860 today and do some history on our government, because last week we came out of my 11th grade government and history book that I had at Ralph Bunch Negro Colored High School in Crockett, Texas. Today, Brother Drew, we're going to come out of two history books that I'm quite puzzled about these two history books. In 1990, Brother Drew, you remember I worked 25 years for Arrow Courier, that courier company. You remember when I worked for that courier company delivering here in Dallas and over the road? Well, David, the guy that owned the company, me and him was just like brothers, because it was me, him, and Big Will, we started the company, and we worked the company almost 6 years before we even hired anybody. So we was like family, even with his mom and everybody. His girlfriend went to SMU. She was a history major, and she was in her last year, senior year in 1990. And she got her two history books, what's called Nations of Nations, Volume 1 and Volume 2. When she got through with those history classes, she gave me those two books. And Groves always wanted to jive me all the time. He asked me, he say, did you know that slaves own black folks in the South? I said, well, hell no, you crazy, Groves. He said, well, come here, let me show you in this book. And this is taught in SMU College, Southern Methodist University. This book is for you when you are a senior at SMU. I find it simply amazing that no black students have graduated in history from SMU from 1990 to 2014, that you took this book when you was a senior in your senior year, and what is written in this book, I ain't heard nobody come back over in the black community or said anything about it. I know this white girl, Sharon, Groves, a girlfriend, she said, do you know that history you were saying? I used to think you was lying. She said, but it's in my book. When I used to tell her the history of black people from 1860, you know, we can start at 1860 or 1555. She was amazed, but we're gonna study out of this history book today, and I'm gonna read out of this book, Brother Drew, about how they teaches about, and this is one of the best books that you can find on this history at this day and period of time. It's go up on the internet, maybe it's McGraw-Hill College Edition. And this is one hell of a book to put in your arsenal if you want to read, because it gives you all of America's history straight down. They don't leave out anything. This is one of the books that is closer to telling the truth that I have ever dealt with, and I read a many book. Is these two books that was at SMU College in 1990. I don't know if they're still teaching out of them, but it was there in 1990, in which they take all good information off the market. But what is written in this book is what we're studying, Hindu theism. Let me remind everybody of what we studied. My class is called Hindu theism. It is the study of every nation or people's history, starting with the oldest history that is known to mankind, which is Yahwehism, which we can trace 250,000 years ago, people on earth recorded history. My motto is documentation beats bullshit conversation, so everything is documented. So when we go and document everything, what was going on at that state period of time, we're dealing with esoteric knowledge, not exoteric matter. Some of the knowledge I say might seem strange to some people, but I will always give you where I got it from. So common sense is what Yahwehism is based upon, and that's what I practice. And it's based upon science and the 12 laws of nature and common sense as you walk to and fro on this earth. And so when you up under the study of Yahwehism, it goes through many stages, steps, and levels to get to that. And when you reach my level, then you understand what I'm talking about, but we can always reason together. So all I'm doing is reason. We're doing some heavy, deep studying, and if you want to embrace the study and go on and learn a little further, just I always give you the history. My number is 469-556-4786. You can call me and ask me, where can I get this history? What is this? Because that's what we are studying. Right now we're studying the Germanic race of people who has captured us and held us in captivity. And we are studying it through Bible, Quran, Torah, Tanakh, and other history books. Like we're finna go into this other history books. So we're going to go back into 1860, and we're going to ask ourselves a question, who, what, when, how, why, and where it comes from. So we're going to ask ourselves a question when we study up on the etymology, which is the study of the origin of the word. So we got the dictionary and all this stuff. So we're going to do deep study, and we ain't going to miss nothing when we study. Issues and attitudes. During the years of reconstructions of all American agreed that racial and political readjustments was necessary. But what changes and how to make them deeply divided contemporary North and South, black and white, Republican and Democrat. People's views tend to cluster around five major political parties, the Radical Republican, the Southern Freedman, that's you, the Northern Conservative, the Southern Conservative, and the Southern Unionist. Let us allow each to speak for himself. The monologue that follows are fabricated by the expresses the position that each group took on Reconstruction. We are standing on Reconstruction. The Radical Republicans, the South must be made to recognize its errors, and Southerners must acknowledge that they have been defeated, that can no longer decide what their own faith is. It is now in the hands of the victory Northern. Southerners can avoid our wrath and show their desires to be readmitted as citizens to the United States in a number of ways. At the very least, they must reject their former leaders and choose new ones who have been connected to the Confederates, that must take oath of loyalty to the United States. They must reject all attempts to repay the Confederate debts incurred in an unjust cause. Most important of all, they must accept the fact that the former slaves are now free and must be treated as the political equal of whites. Many former slaves worked and fought for the Union, and we must now help them through the different transaction of full freedom. As to how the end can best be accomplished, not all of us agree. A few hold that it will be necessary for the freedmen to get land so they can support themselves independently. But we all believe that at the very minimum that they must be given the right to vote, and during the early stage of the changes must be protected against privatization and exploitation. No doubt they will be grateful for the effort that their Republican friends in defeating the slave power, destroyed slavery, and defended them against those who do not accept the new situation. This gratitude will incline them to vote Republican, Radical Republican, but that is all of the goods. The Republican Party is the great hope of the nation. It is the party of freedom and economic progress. It is not afraid to use government to encourage that progress. In a word, it is the party that has since its founding proved that it is the best for both nations, moral and practical, especially the Southern freedmen. The Northern Conservatives, what they believe. We, the Northern Conservatives, are generally of the old Democratic presentation. Most of us oppose secession and supports the war. But we agree that now that the war is over and secession defeat, we must forget the past, let Southerners, white Southerners, that is, determine their own fate. It is the best American tradition to let local community decide their own future without undue interference from the national government. Let us confirm that this great principle of local self-determination, and let us allow the South back into the Union on its own terms. The Southern Conservative. The war we fought and lost was for a noble cause, and it brought out the best in our Southern people. We must never forget the sacrifice and heroism of the gallant men in gray. Perhaps secession was a mistake, but that fact will never diminish the grandeur of our struggle. But let us now get back to the business of daily living. We of the South must be allowed to resume our traditional political relation with the rest of the state. We must be free to determine our own fate with a minimum of condition. Above all, we must be permitted to steer our own cause of race relation. The carpetbaggers who come down from the north looking for easy money and the southern renegades, scallywags, will betray their own people for the sake of power. The Southern Unionists. At long last, we are free to speak our mind. For our long years, we have been persecuted and intimidated by the secession. Now that they have defeated, we deserve recognition and favor. Unfortunately, rebels are still in the majority. They say they have accepted the new circumstance of the South, but many of them have not, and we are in the vulnerable position at the least to protect our northern friends against hostile rebel soldiers. That was the Southern Union. The Southern Freedman, that's you. We are now free men and women and must be according to all the privileges of free people and expression in the Declaration of Independence. We contribute to Union victories and wars and have earned the rights to be treated as equal. We are also the largest group in the South. Truly loyal to the Union, Southern whites will, with some exception, cannot be trusted. They are on record to defeat, and if the North fails to protect us and guarantee our rights as free men and women, these ex-Confederates will once more seize power and nullify the Union victory. The federal government then must continue for an indefinite period to take an active role in the process of Southern Reconstruction. We do not accept white Southerners to treat us social equal, but we must have equal before the law and full civil rights, including, of course, the right to vote. We must also have economic independence, which means not only the right to sell our labor in the open market, but also the rights to own our own land. Thousands of the South's best acres abandoned by disloyal owners during the war are controlled either by the Freedmen Bureau or by the armies. Giving us this land would enable us to secure our independence and prevent us being kept in permanent subnormal position. We also deserve education. Illiteracy is an important tool for achieving economic independence. If the cost of a public school system means that Southern white taxes must rise to it, raise it, so be it. I find, Brother Drew, that the black man just coming off the plantation got more sense than the present day one that has a doctor's degree. and I wanted to read that coming out of this book, and for you to understand that we once had a party. And when we get through tracing the history of what happened in the party, you'll understand who the Democrats are. And we just studying history. We're just looking at history. Why, you should have your own party. Your ancestors coming off the plantation, you was better off then because you were sharecroppers. You're going to learn. We're going to start off with the yeoman farmers. Who was called the yeoman farmers at that time? They had different names at that time. We gonna even get off. This book is deep, but let's so I'm gonna get off into this book. We're gonna start with the history of poor whites. The poorest white Southerners was confined to land that no one else wanted. They lived in rough, unchained, windowless log cabins located in the remotest area and was often squatters without ties to the land they were on. The men spent their time hunting and fishing while women did the domestic work, including what farming they could manage. Circumstance made their poverty difficult to escape. Largely illiterate, they suffered from malnutrition stemming from a diet of corn, pork, and whiskey, and they was afflicted with malaria, hookworm, diseases that sapped their energy. Other white Southerners referred to these scoffers as crackers, white trash, sand hills, and clay eaters. The number of poor whites in the Old South was estimated 1 million, or about 5% of the white population. Because poor whites traded with slaves, I want you to hear this, exchanged whiskey for stolen goods, contemporary planters often bought them out. The contemporary planters, which was the big planters, often bought them out simply to rid the neighborhood of them. For their part, poor whites keenly resented planters, but their hostile towards African Americans was even stronger. Poor whites refused to perform any work commonly done by slaves. Opposing ending slaves, emancipation would remove one of the few symbols of their status, that they were at least free. That's the poor white boy. See, what you don't understand that back in that day and time, your ancestors was more valuable than this poor white trash. You had more when you came out off the plantation retreat than this cracker, because we finna find out what you had, according to this book. Slaves. It said, it starts off, they label this the peculiar institution. Slaves was not free. Their overwhelming fact must be understood before anything is said about the kindness or the cruel individual slave experience. Before any consideration of healthy or unhealthy living condition, before any discussion of how slave families coated with hardship, rejoice in sharing pleasures, worshiping in prayers. The lives of slaves was affected day in and day out in big ways and small at the basic reality that slaves were not their own masters. The master determines a slave's workload, whether a slave would visit a nearby plantation, whether a slave family maintained intact. Whenever a slave family wanted to do, they had always had to consider the response of their masters. When power is determined, it is unequal as it was between master and slave. Every action on the part of the enslaved involved a certain calculation, conscious or unconscious. the consequence of every act, of every expression or gesture had to be considered. In that sense, the line between freedom and slavery penetrated every corner of a slave's life, and it was an absolutely an overwhelming day to reckon with. One other fact reinforcing the sharp line between freedom and slavery was distinguished on the basis of color. While the particular institution was an economic system of labor, it was also a caste system. Now, that's a very interesting word there, Brother Drew, because we were a caste system. Behind the hell did America become a caste system 6 weeks ago when Barack was on TV? He said that the government had we had a class problem, not a race problem. We had a class problem. So if you got a class problem, how did this Republican system become a caste system based on race? A caste system is based on race. The color line of slavery made it easy to defend the institution and win the support of yeoman farmers and poor white Southerners, even though in many ways the system held them back. Hence, slavery must be understood on many levels, not only as economic system, but also as a racial and cultural one, in terms of not only its outward condition of life, labor, but also the inner demands of made on the soul. This is what this guy that whoever wrote these, it was five professors, college professors wrote this book for a college. They letting you know, they're giving a commentary here. They don't want you to forget. See, a lot of times you forget this and forget that, especially if you're a white person, what slavery was, what they telling you right here, don't forget right here about how slaves' life. So we're going back and see how everything actually was in that day and period and time. And when we do that, then we get a better picture of what was going on. And this book gives a hell of a lesson on it. The conditions slaves encountered various wildly depending on the size of the farm or plantation. The crops being grown, the personality of the master, and whether he was an absentee owner. On small farms, slaves worked in the fields alongside their owners and with much closer contact with whites. On plantations, in contract, most slaves dealt primarily with the overseer, who was paid by the white slaves of to see the size of the harvest he bought in, and was therefore often harsh in his approach. House servants and the drivers who supervised the field hands accordingly. The high stature and skilled artists such as carpenters and blacksmiths was also given special recognition. The hardest work was done by the field hands, both men and women, who sometimes was divided into plow hands and hoe gangs. Some plant organized their slaves in gang systems. This is a very interesting here, because these are the systems that they had us put up on a gang system, in which a white overseer, a black driver, supervises gangs of 20 to 25 adults. Although this approach extended long hours of reasonable hard labor, the slave had to be constantly supervised, and shrinkles was difficult to detect. Other planters preferred the task system, under which each slave was given a specific daily assignment to complete, after which he or she was finished for the day. This system allowed slaves to work at their own pace, giving them an incentive to do careful work, and freed overseers from having to choose supervising the work. On the other hand, slaves resented viciously if masters tried to increase the workload. The task system was most common in the raft fields, whereas the gang system predominated in the cotton district. Many planters used a combination of the two. Toil began just before sunrise and continued until dusk. That means that you're butt working, Brother Jew. During harvest and cultivation, slaves was in the field 15 to 16 hours a day, eating a noonday meal and then resting before consuming labor back in 10 minutes. Work was uncommonly on Sunday, and frequently on a half a day was required on Saturday. Even so, the routine was frequently only a half a day was regarded frequently. This is some little writing here, but Drew, eyes bad. We have problems at work the full day. An Arkansas cotton planter reported, "I am never caught in bed after daylight, nor in body else on the place, and we continue in the cotton field when we have that farewell until it's so dark we can't see to work." It was some tough time, Brother Drew. They don't know. See, I came through some of that. See, I know what working in a cotton field is. Given a wide gulf between freedom and slavery, it was only natural that slaves resented the bondage imposed upon them. Unlike Latin America, slave revolts was rare in the southern United States, where whites outnumbered blacks. The government was more powerful. A majority of slaves was native born, and family life was strong. Slaves recognized the odds against them, and many potential leaders became fugitives instead. What is remarkable is that American slaves revolted at all. Early in the 19th century, several well-organized uprisings was barely thought. In 1800, Gabriel Prosser, P-R-O-S-S-E-R, a slave blacksmith, recruited perhaps a couple of hundred slaves in a plan to march on Richmond and capture the governor. But a few slaves betrayed the plot, and Posers and other leaders was eventually captured and executed. Denmark Beza conspiracy in Charleston in 1822 met a similar fate. The most famous slave revolt, led by a literate slave preacher named Nat Turner, that's my hero, was more spontaneous. Turner, who lived on a farm in southwestern Virginia, was given unusual privilege by his master, who described as a kind and trusted man, a religious mystic. Turner became convinced that God had selected him to punish white people through terror and devastation. One night in 1831, following an eclipse of the sun, he and six Confederates stole out and murdered Turner's master and family, recruited some 70 slaves as they went. Turner band killed 57 white men, women, and children. The revolt lasted only 48 hours before Turner was eventually captured and tried and executed. with that uprising was quickly put down, it left white Southerners with a hunting, uneasy. Turner seems a model slave, yet who could read the true emotion behind the mass of obedience? Few slaves followed Turner's violent example, but there was others who resented a majority ways of the old master. Octavia Johnson, most dragged could be as Octavia Johnson did and run away, was the odds stacked heavily against them. Few runaways escaped safely to freedom except from the border states. Most frequent slaves fled to nearby woods or swamps. Some runaways stayed out only a few days. Others, like Johnson, held out for months. Many slaves resisted by abusing their master's property. Using his head now, Brother Drew. I like this one because, see, this let me know that our ancestors could outthink the white man. It said many slaves abused their master's property. They mishandled animals, broke tools and machinery, misplaced items, and worked carefully in gangs in the field. Now listen, they organized, Brother Drew, in the fields. Slaves also brought to trick the master by singing, acting illness or injury, and by hiding rocks in the cotton they picked. Make it way more. You had a certain amount of pounds you had to pick a day. If you was a full hand, you picked 1,000 pounds. If you was a half a hand, you picked 500 pounds. That's what they used to have each person. Remember now, 1,000 pounds, a bale of cotton equals 1,000 pounds, so each slave had to pick 1,000 pounds. Slaves complained directly to the owner about an overseer mistreating. They attempted to drive a wedge between the two. They would complain to the master that the overseer was mistreating. They just kept up confusion. But that's a brilliant, that's what you call counterintelligence right there, that I don't see none of our people doing in today's society. Let's leave it right here. Slaves raided the master's smokehouse, secretly slaughtered his stock, killed his poultry. Slaves often disguised between stealing from each other and merely taking from white folks. They didn't steal from each other. They only stole from white folks. They didn't kill. They stole from white masters. Them has done telling us it is a slave road. Them that's just them done tell us it's wrong to lie and steal. Recall Josephine Howard, former slave in Texas. But why did them white folks steal my mama and her daddy and her mama? Them living over in Africa. This is wrote in old pigeon language. Language in this history book, that them sinful white folks stealing them here. Slaves learned to outwit their masters. One former bondsman testified by wearing an impermeable mask around white. How much of joy or sorrow or misery and grief have they hidden from their tutors? Frederick Douglass, the most famous fugitive, explained that as the master studied to keep the slave ignorant, the slave is cunning enough to make the master think he succeeded. Oh, that's heavy, Brother Drew. That is heavy, because my daddy always taught me that about a cracker. If you want to make a sucker and a fool out of him, my daddy told him, tell that cracker what he wanted to hear. Well, it's wrote in Southern Methodist. Now, you can't get no crackified in Southern Methodist Church. You can't get no They see when it says Southern Methodist, they mean Southern Methodist. They just let y'all come in and just did it. But what do they believe? Just like the Southern Baptists, what do they believe? And the angelic, what do they believe? That the present day black folks got all their head up in their butts. See, our forefathers, your forefathers, they was a different breed of the present day people that we're seeing right now, Brother Drew. I mean, when we read these histories of this, especially this, Frederick Douglass, as the master studied to keep the slave ignorant, the slave is cunning enough to make the master think he succeeded in keeping him ignorant. I find that simply amazing that we ain't got these kind of people no more that came out of this stock of people. This stock that you got now is weak as rainwater. You got another mindset than these people right here. These people, they wanted to have something. It was strictly self. They didn't want nobody to give them nothing. They were stuck. Now, the next thing that this book addresses is slave culture. We had our own slave culture. This is what I say, Brother Drew, this book is awesome, man. You got to have one of these books to read this. It's so much stuff in here, man. They broke it down, man. I like books that tell the truth. I mean, you can see the truth in here. When you read this, you can see the truth because you've been, we know, because I had forefathers that lived back in that day. I came through segregation, and if you over 60 years old, you know what this book is talking about. Trapped in bondage, slaves could at least forge a culture of their own by combining strands from their African past with customs that evolved from their lives in America. The slave culture was most distanced on big plantations where the large slave population lived further apart from the whites. Now, they separated their own self. They maintained a sense of family with one of the most remarkable achievements of African Americans in bondage. Given the obstacles they faced, Southern laws did not recognize slave marriage as legal binding, nor it allowed slave parents complete authority over their children. Black women faced the possibility of rape by the master or overseer without legal recourse, and husbands, wives, and children had to live with the fear of being sold and separated. From 1820 to 1860, more than 2 million slaves were sold in the interstate slave trade. Perhaps 600,000 husbands and wives were separated by such sales. Still, after all of that, still, this book says, family ties remain strong. As slave culture demonstrated, the marriage ceremony among slaves varied from a formal religious service to jumping over the broom in front of the slave community to nothing more than the master giving verbal approval. Whenever the ceremony, slaves viewed the ritual as a public affiliation of the couple's commitment to their new duties and responsibilities. Rather than adopt in white norms, adapting the white norms after they get married, slaves develop their own moral codes concerning sexual relationships and marriage. Although young slaves often engaged in pre-marriage sex, they was expected to choose a partner and become part of a stable family. It has been estimated that at least 1 in 5 slave women had 1 or more children before marriage, but most of these mothers eventually married. The Negro had their own ideals or morals, and they held them very strictly. The daughter of a Georgia planter recalled, they did not consider it wrong for a girl to have a child before she married, but afterwards were very strict upon anything like infidelity on her part. This traditional nucleus of father, mother, and children was the rule, not the exception, among slaves. Laboring in the quarters was divided according to sex. Women did the indoor work such as cooking, washing, and sewing, and men performed outdoors chores such as gathering wood, hauling water, and tending the animals and garden plots. The men also hunted and fished to supply the spare weekly ration. My daddy caught rabbits, coons, and possums, recalled Lowe's Adams of North Carolina, who worked all day and hunted at night. This is very interesting history here. Songs and stories of protests and celebration. They got this in this history book. In the songs they sang, slaves expressed some of their deepest feelings about life. The songs of the slaves represented the sorrows of his heart, committed Frederick Douglass. Surely there was a bitterness as well as sorrow when slaves sang. We raise the wheat, they give us the corn. We bake the bread, they give us the crust. We shift the meal, they give us the husk. We peel the meat, they give us the skin. And the way they can take us all. Yet they had songs that also centered to the celebration held in the slave quarters for marriage, Christmas, and after harvest time. And a slave on his way to the field might sing, Saturday night and Sunday too, young girls on my mind, Monday morning way full day, old master got me gwine, piggy got those love me now. Slaves expressed themselves through stories as well as song. Most often these tales use animals and symbolic symbols of the primitive in which slaves found themselves. And the best known of these is the cunning Bra' Rabbit. It was a weak fellow who defeated large animals like Bra' Fox and Bra' Rabbit. I had forgot about that, Brother Drew, by using his wit. Other stories was less symbolic and contained more hostility towards white people. These stories were the director of summers taught the young how to survive in a hostile world, meaning that we had signs and symbols in our folklore fairy tale back where we was taught this when we was kids, Brother Drew, and they had meaning in them, but Grandpa didn't teach me about the meaning in it, but he did teach me a lot about animals and stuff, their ways, but I don't recall this. He probably did, but I just don't recall it. The next is the best one of all, Billy Drew. The Lord calls us home. That's the title. At the center of the slave culture was religion. Now, don't nobody get mad and go get mad, but this is what we're talking about. We're going to understand the forefathers' history. This is the true hurts. At the center of slave culture was religion. Slave owners encouraged a careful, controlled form of religion among slaves. Church was what they called it. One former slave protested, but all the preachers talk about us from us slaves to obey our master and not to lie and steal. Nothing about Jesus was ever said, and the overseer stood there to see that the preacher talked as he wanted him, so talk. In response, some slaves rejected all religion. Most slaves, however, sought a Christian firmly their own, a Christianity forming their own form of Christianity beyond the control of the master. On many plantations, they met secretly at night when they broke into rhythmic singing and dancing model on the ring shouts of African religion. The way in which we worship is almost indescribable, one slave preacher recalled. The singing was accomplished by a certain rhythm of motion, clapping of hand, tossing the head, which would continue without concession for half an hour in an environment where a slave for most of the day was prevented from expressing their deepest feelings. These meetings serve as a satisfying emotional release. Religion also provided slaves with value to guide them through their daily experience and give them a sense of self-worth. Slaves learned that God would render the poor and downtrodden and rise then one day to honor and glorify, just as certainly on the final day of judgment. Masters would be punished for their sins. This is one reason why I believe in hell, a former slave declared. I don't believe a just God is going to take no such man as my former slave master into his kingdom. Again, songs played a central role. Slaves sang religious spiritual at work and at play as well as the religious service. Seeming meek and overwhelming. The songs often contain a hidden element of protest. Frederick Douglass disclosed that when slaves sang longingly to Cana, sweet Cana, they was talking not only of the Bible's promised land, but of the North and freedom. While song lyrics might speak of a otherwise freedom from sin in heaven, their hearts was concealing a world escaping from physical bondage. Religious men served not only to confront slaves after days of toil and sorrow, it also sent the strength of togetherness and their bond to Africa, held out the promise of every freedom in the world and the next. The faith that someday that time will come when they will go back to where they came from. The role of religion in the lives of slaves. Modern studies of slavery recognize that religion was one of the most critical components of misguiding of slave culture. Historians have disagreed, however, over the role that those religious beliefs played. Some historians have agreed that slaves took the evangelical religion of whites and adopted it, creating an essence of their religion, a new version of Christianity that they strongly reflects their African heritage. The role of singing and dancing in slave service represented the continuous form of African form. The African views of God spoke to individuals by possessing their spirits was akin to the conversion experience in evangelic churches, and the African concept of a created God was easily adopted to the Christian concept of all power or deities. They didn't believe in God. They believed in deities. So they had to compare. This is what this religion was called by white as voodoo and hoodoo. This is what white folks said. It said that the church, one historian concluded, was the single most important institution of American life and training the bondsman. While slaves managed to preserve a sense of self-worth in a culture of their own, they found it impossible to escape full from white control. Even the social hierarchy within the slave quarter never had entire freedom from the white world. The prestige of a slave driver rests ultimately on the authority of the white master and skilled slave and house slave. How long much more we got, Brother Drew? Brother Drew.
Okay, Brother Dwight. Okay, that's it for today.
How much more have we got?
Oh, well, we got plenty of time. We got another hour if you need it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I wanted to touch down on that so we could see how it was back in that day and time, and how we think in this day and time. And this is a must-do book to get. And when you get this book, then you can see how what system that we have been put up under since then, and what we should do to get out of it. And we asked ourselves questions, and we'll go in and see that we know for a fact, Brother Drew, that a Republican government goes through four different stages of a Republican. It goes through a mob form of government, it goes through a demagogue, an anarchy, and a despotism. DESPOTISM. Anarchy, ANARCHY. Demagogue, DEMAGOGY. Let's go and deal with etymology so we get a better understanding of it. Mob, a lawless crowd that easily move to act without thinking. The dominant group in a city or state government. A democratic form of government. That's what a mob form of government is. Demagogue, a popular leader who stirs up the people by appealing to their emotions and prejudice to get money and power for themselves or political parties. That's a demagogue. Anarchy. Disorder, confusion, lawlessness in a government system. That's despotism, DESPOTISM. A tyrant form of government governed by a monarchy having unlimited power and control. A title meaning master or lord. Well, let's see about where do we stand right now? Where in this form of government do we stand? And if we got the right definition of it, and it says that the mob is the Democrat Party, so the mob would be the Democrat Party, but then the demagogue would be Obama, the cause would be anarchic, and it would lead to despotism. I find that quite intriguing because we can look at history in that shape and form. We can look at our history as we speak in that shape and form. And when we look at it in that shape and form, then we know that we're in a world of trouble right now, that we should know what was going on during slavery in our history. And what is the Black Codes? Let's ask ourselves another question. What is the Black Codes, and what do they mean during that period in time, since we're reviewing history? It said, during the months of the Johnson government, operated without restraint from Washington, these threatened the radical Republicans and destroyed any possibility that Congress would accept the president's Reconstruction policies. Several actions especially offended the Northern Unionists, and the effect for new states and federal officials. Southern voters selected few real Unionists, choosing to represent the former Confederate states in the upcoming Congress was 4 Confederate generals, 5 Confederate colonels, 6 Confederate cabinets officials, 58 former Confederate congressmen, and Alexander H. Stephens, Vice President of the Confederate States of America. Many of the newly elected state officials was also tainted with secession. It was natural for white Southerners to turn to former successors for their leaders, but the blunt display of Confederate sympathy outraged many Northerners. The new state legislature combined the offense. Despite the president's recommendation, several refused to ratify the 13th Amendment passed by the Congress in January 1865. Is when you study this history, it's very important that you understand the 13th and 14th Amendment, because you can't get reparations. And the reason that you can't get reparation is that in this book, we was told about William Natchez Johnson, who was a black slave owner on the Annabelle plantation. You can go to Natchez, Mississippi, and see the museum of his plantation down in Natchez. He owned slaves. He owned white slaves. My guy worked for him. He bought me the book. Took me and him and his girlfriend. We went down there because he wanted to prove to me that. Slaves on white folks. Not only just white folks on black folks, but black folks on white folks. And you'll find out that 3,600 blacks on plantation. They're called Annabelle Plantation, most of those plantations. But it's very, 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 very important that you understand why you can't get reparation, a reformation, because who are you going to pay? You don't know. They can't determine that. And then the 13th and 14th Amendment tells you that. So read that, and you'll find in there where they got even with you. None of the Johnson government allowed even a handful of blacks to vote. But worst of all, each of them enacted a set of laws to govern race relations, the black codes, that jarred union sensibility. These codes did extend to the free man civil rights to normal citizens. They legalized marriage between blacks, including early slave relationships, permitted ex-slaves to buy, own, sell, and otherwise transfer property, and gave the free man the right to appear, plead, and testify in court in cases involving only blacks. But the code also sought to give the ex-slave permanent second-class legal, economic, and political status under the black code. Black southerners could not offend their labor freely on the market. Mississippi required black workers to produce search January a written document showing that they had a contract to work for the coming year. Laborers who left their job before a contract expired forfeit any wages already earned and would be arrested for vagrants, defined as the hour disorder, and then who misspend what that they earned could face fines or forced plantation labor. The South Carolina codes declared and demanded a still annual taxes for blacks working on anything other than farms or servants in Florida. Blacks who broke labor contracts could be whipped, sold into indenture for them for 1 year and placed in the guardhouse. In several states, black was forbidden to bear arms, with subjects of more severe penalties of giving offense than whites, and could not live or buy property in Pacific location, meaning that we call it in today's time redline. Most states prohibited interracial marriage. Most ranking of all that adhesionship would allow the courts to bind in black runner minor to employ for a period of time without their own consent of their parents. Now that's cold right there. See, these states on this black laws say that if you owe the white man a debt, he can come in your house, take your children, and make them work out that debt. One black man wrote the Federal Bureau, the Freeman Bureau, "I think very hard of the former, owners for trying to keep my blood when I knew that slavery is dead." A black union veteran exclaimed, "If you call this freedom, what do you call slavery?" Up under those laws. Many Southerners and many Northerners consider the president's version of Reconstruction deplorable. William Finley wrote, the Chicago Tribune wrote, declared that the people of the North would turn one of the worst offending states, Mississippi, into a frog pond before they would allow its black code to disgrace one foot a soil in which the bones of our soldiers sleep and over which the flag of freedom waves. another critic called the Codes an outrage against civilization. Many Northern Congressmen was receiving almost daily response from white Southern unionists that the former secession was crowing about how they once again had the upper hand and would make life difficult for their opponent. Spontaneous Northern travelers in Dixie recalled unpleasant experience with unconstructed rebels. The outrage over Johnson government polygamy and the black codes could not deceive us about the extent of racial liberation in the nation at large. Northern and Southern Democrats was often racist who had no scruple against appealing to the prejudice and resented every opportunity to franchise with black. Republicans generally was less bigoted and in any case believed that the freedom votes was needed to keep former rebels from regaining in the South. But many Republicans was reluctant to avoid black America the full rights of citizenship, at least they themselves lived in the fall. Now, I find that simply amazing because how did we become Democrats in 2014? Go back into the history when the South will rise again with that Southern custom. Well, it was through the Democrat Party. And through the Democratic Party, the South rose again. That's why your race is. Back in the 50s, and this was we can see that this was due to illiterance, Brother Drew. Our forefathers was illiterate to government, but ways of life they wasn't illiterate. But we can see where we didn't check out nothing that what was given to us until a certain period of time. And we can't fault our forefathers for not seeing what we are able to see now. And it's just amazing for when we are able to see something in the shape that we're in and how we got in this shape. And you can see, walk the history of how we got in this shape right now. That's what we're doing. We are entertaining it, seeing what we can come up with. And see, when you go back and you see how the black codes have affected us, where it made us second-class citizens. But being second-class citizens, we was very successful all the way up into 1970. Something happened to us after 1970. I mean, after 1970, it took them 100 years. I'm going to tell you a sad story. It took them 100 years for them to integrate. When they were supposed to do it in 1870, they didn't do it until 1970. So you can see the plot of genocizing us. When they did it, we was totally genocided. We can see now that it was best for us to go back into the way that we were when we was black. I mean, colored people. That part of our history is the best part of our history than living as African Americans right now in the present day society. So what did our forefathers do? Well, they was sharecroppers. They had a different understanding about life than what we have in today's society. And so when you have the right mind, then you can become prosperous, especially with certain knowledge and stuff that we got to have at a certain period of time. But your baby's got to have this knowledge of self, or who you were and how great you were at one time. When you look at these black codes, we can't blame anybody. I don't blame anybody for anything. I don't blame Crocker or Picklewood or whatever you want to call him. I call him all names. Even if I'm around you, I call you that, and you want to But I fish with peckerwoods. You know that. I fish with two peckerwoods, and the word peckerwood means good old boy. That's what a peckerwood is, good old boy. But I call them crackers too. And they know when I call them cracker that I'm pissed off. Because I ask them what you crackers talking about, you know, when you get to talking different things, although we tight friends, but we still see. But when we look at what the black codes have done to us, and we still up under those black codes, we ain't up under those black codes, then we can understand a little bit better what we need to do. A lot of people ask what we need to do. What we need to do is know our history. And when we know our history and what has been done to us, then we'll see you have to separate from the white man. You don't want to do this. Me, I think it's impossible at this stage that you separate, that you see a mass bunch of people burn through separating. I just don't see it coming into existence. But we still have to get the message out here, and we have to get certain studies out. And if you have a certain study that you wanted me to go back over, I was asked by my brother to go back over a study of some studies. Just holler at me if you miss some studies, because I know some people have traveled. One lady told me she missed the teaching of Yah. Would I go back over that? And so I might go back over some studying, but I really wanted to get this secret societies where we get a pin on the secret societies. When they did not give us the education at a certain period of time, but then that made us go through a period of time where it looked like we was really illiterate in certain fields, which we were illiterate in certain fields, because the history that I know just came into existence. I just learned it maybe 40 or 50 years ago, Brother Drew. And that history is I had to go back and find out about everything that I had learned, and found out that hell, everything I learned was not the truth. And the black codes and Reconstruction is very important for you to understand, because you had to understand that religion, and look deep at your religion, because right now Christianity is the only religion that is against all other religion, and especially the ancient ways, because Christianity do not deal with dietary laws. It does not. They live under grace from the dietary laws. Every religion follows the teaching of Yah, the original teaching, all but Christianity. And that's the most important part that a person that's a Christian has to deal with, and you look like me and you, Brother Drew, is that Christianity is not the correct way for you. And if you tell me that you follow in the ways of Jesus, well, Jesus was a Jew. Judaism, within you practicing Yahwehism. If you practice Islam, you practicing Yahwehism. Because each one of those deal with dietary law. If you practice Buddhism, you're dealing with Yahwehism, Taoism, Yin and Yang, Confucianism. Any so-called religion in the world that you deal with, they obey those dietary laws. They don't eat unclean foods, such as pork, such as catfish. Most of them are vegetarians, the very strict ones. A vegetarian. The ones that do eat meat, they kosher they meat, meaning they soak it in brine water, which is salt water, for 3 days and get all the bloods and the steroids after meat. These people do this, Brother Drew. So, but the Christians don't. You go to a Christian supermarket, then What you got? You got chicken with steak with blood running everywhere. Go to a Hebrew supermarket, and it's right here in Dallas. Go to a Muslim, and they got some over on Spring Hill. I know five or six places where you can go to a Muslim meat market and a Jew meat market and buy your food if you don't want to do it at home. You can do this. So don't say that you can't do this. You can do this. And this is why I say only a few people have come out, Brother Drew, is because right now it's convenient. Everything is convenient for you to do the right thing, but you don't want to do the right thing. And because you say I'm a Christian, and that, but you have to study your history. And if you say you believe and love this man named Jesus, he was a Jew. He practiced Judaism. He did not practice Christianity. I'm sorry. I mean, I ain't nobody trying to take Jesus away from you, but Jesus wasn't a Christian. You got to obey the way Jesus obeyed was Judaism. You got to go learn Judaism. If you are a Christian and you one of them diehard, hope to die people of Jesus, and you say you love Jesus, well, you shouldn't be understanding and worship Jesus through Christianity, because Christianity is divided up into three different doctrines, and that wasn't Jesus' teaching. You got to know who the real Jesus is. Ain't nobody trying to take Jesus away from you, but you had to know who the real Jesus is. And you say you believe in the Bible tell you that was people had come and fall. So Christianity, as we speak today, that teaching has got to go. If that teaching goes, then you'll see people with the right dietary laws, and then you'll see people start being born with the right mind. You see, because to clean up, you have to bond with the right mind, stay on that dietary law. When you finally get the right mind, you'll understand that if you stay on this dietary law of eating clean food, that 120 years, after 120 years, you'll be able to, you'll have a good mind, Brother Drew. So if you got a, eat the right food, it will produce a good mind, because the right food is going to the mind. And when the Creator created you, He created you mind, not body. And mind ain't no spirit, it ain't no damn soul, as the Christians call it. Mind is mind. And the mind ain't associated with the heart. If you have a good heart, you're born to heaven. That's a fool that thinks that away. You got to have a good mind. Your heart is a pump. And some people don't understand that. You have to understand what is for real and what is not for real. So go check it out. But most people that's up under Christianity, they're not going to go check it out. And so, but those of you that traveling and trying to learn knowledge, you will check out what the right way is. The ways of Abraham means that you are either practicing Judaism or Islam or some other religion. Your Bible tells you that Jesus was in the ways of Abraham. So, and after the order of Melchizedek, you clearly spoken on that. So you believe everything all the way to the government. We have explained how the government, what ways that Christianity has put you up under this way. And so until you can find out about that, you have to go through many shapes and forms of esoteric knowledge to find out about the truth. And so that's why we have to travel through Laod, things that we have forgotten. And next week, I want to deal with something, Brother Drew, that's very interesting to me, since we go back and discuss who Yah was. But I find it very interesting that it would tell you in the Bible that when we look for history to repeat itself, that we at the point where history is repeating itself 100 miles an hour, we're going to go and check out what is said in the Bible, in the Quran, about clouds. See, the clouds that was talked about in the Bible is different from those clouds, and all of this was like put into dogma and allegories and folklore. But when we go back and check out this history, is very interesting history. I always like to pick a subject and we go back and check out certain words, and this time we're going to go check out about a cloud. See, a cloud, as you look at a cloud, see, because we'll lead up into weather modification, but we got to go check out the clouds in the Bible before we get into weather modification. When you see the old jet plane up in the air, sometimes don't always keep your head to the ground, look up in the sky every now and then. You might accidentally see a plane up there throwing off white smoke coming from it. And as you notice that this white folks smoke, if you notice it for a period of time, it would turn to what we would call a cloud. But what kind of cloud? Because you would have to know the different kinds and formation of clouds to understand is what kind of cloud is this thing making, or is it not making one? You also have to know that a cloud floats on the air, and in 15 minutes a cloud is disappearing. But the clouds that we see that the whole jet make in the morning and sometime in the afternoon and sometime there in the evening time is according to what area these clouds stay. And after these clouds, these jets over a period of years have been making these clouds, we see an ozone level the next day and different things. And there's a lot of studies been done on weather modification and these planes and the what's in that cloud, what's being dumped in that cloud. We have a lot of reports on that knowledge, so we're going to do that knowledge. But the clouds that's in the Bible is a little different, because those clouds that's in the Bible, they give out some description of those clouds. And it's wrote in Hebrew, so we're going to translate certain Hebrew words out of Hebrew into this language so we'll understand a word like Amod, A-M-M-O-O-D. We're going to translate. That means a cylinder-shaped craft. And the word A-W-N, that means the materialization of the clouds. And so when you got that, you know, we going to go into that deep subject right there. But that's what we'll be talking about next week, Brother Drew, is the clouds.
Okay.
You there, Brother Drew? All right. So if there's any, if anybody have any questions, holler at me. If not, we'll see you next week.
All right. Anybody on the phone want to get in real quick, press 1. If not, we're going to adjourn and catch y'all next week at 1 p.m. Central. All right. Look like we out of here, Brother DeWine. I don't see no pants going up.
All right.
Okay, Shabbat
Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.